Coming up in NBA awards check-in entering the All-Star break, and my thoughts on the tanking happening with one-third of the teams around the NBA right now before I take some questions that were recorded live on YouTube. Welcome back to the Kevin O'Connor Show. I'm solo today. I'm leaving for All-Star Weekend later today, so we're going to be doing a little bit of a YouTube mailbag show, and I want to start off with an NBA awards check-in before we talk about the tanking happening league-wide around the NBA, some other timely news as well. I want to start off with an awards check-in because it's a good time. Take a little breather, look at the state of the league, and we'll start off with the MVP. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, still number one on my MVP ballot right now. I have him ahead of Victor Wembanyama, second, and Nikola Jokic, third on my ballot right now. SGA, 32 points a game, 67% true shooting, even better than he was last season, plus six assists, four boards, great defense as well. Dealing with an abdominal injury right now. He's going to be reevaluated after the All-Star break, and OKC plays Thursday night. And so that's going to mean SGA can only miss 10 more games the remainder of the season. Then Jokic, he can miss only one more game. Wemby can miss only three more games. And if all of these guys become ineligible, SGA's first right now. I think these three are in a class of their own. But after that, Cade Cunningham, Donovan Mitchell, those guys definitely would move up. I think they'd round off my top five. Cade, top five deserving for sure. The engine of the Pistons, great two-way player. Then Mitchell, kind of underrated. 29-6-5 this year, playing the most competitive defense he has really in his entire NBA career. Super efficient, super versatile. Jaylen Brown would be in there as well, but he's got some weird on-off numbers that he's going with right now. The Celtics are a +3 with Jaylen Brown on the floor. They're a +12.9 without Jaylen Brown. That's going to be used against him, I think, when it comes time to voting for MVP. And obviously, Luka. But the Lakers are a sixth seed right now. Obviously, Anthony Edwards, they're also kind of on that play-in bubble and a defensive liability off ball, as I talked about with Dane Moore on my podcast earlier. Kawhi Leonard, team's in the play-in. He can miss just one more game. Stephen Curry, team's in the play-in. He can miss just one more game as well. And then Tyrese Maxey, he's also be in that conversation too, but the Sixers are a sixth seed. Defensive player of the year. Number one, Victor Wembanyama. Spurs have a 105.3 defensive rating when he's on the floor, 112.8 when he's off, a 7.5 differential. Rudy Gobert, I'd have him number two. Wolves have a 107.9 on defensive rating with him on the floor, 116.2 with him off the floor, an 8.3 differential. Both of those guys in a class of their own on the defensive end of the floor. And Scotty Barnes, I'd have him third. Scotty, I mean, look, he doesn't have the numbers, but clutch defense with blocks in the final moments, plays versatile, plays some center for them, plays wing, defends guards. Scotty's been awesome for the Toronto Raptors. And with Wemby in the MVP conversation, in the Defensive Player of the Year conversation, they're legit contenders, man. They are legit contenders. I went on Jason Timp's podcast, Hoops Tonight, this week, and we talked about our contender rankings. And with Wemby reaching this level that he's on right now, you saw what he did against the Lakers the other night, 25 points in the first quarter, scored 17 points in the game, inside, outside, in every way. With Wemby playing at this level, really the only question is, does this team have enough shooting around Victor Wembanyama? They're so good right now, they've released Jeremy Sochan. I hope somebody's able to pick him up. I appreciate you guys watching us live in the chat. Please give us a like if you have not done so already and subscribe to Yahoo and NBA as well. For Rookie of the Year, Cooper Flagg, number one. What he's done recently, last six games, 32 points per game, 7.7 boards, four assists, shooting 45.5% from three, 84% from the line at seven per game. Cooper is already looking like a top 25, 30 player in the NBA since he turned 19 years old in December. 22.5 points per game, seven boards, five assists, 38.5% from three. He's doing what he did at Duke last year. At Duke last season, Cooper, after he turned 18, took a big leap as a shooter, and it really accelerated and opened up his game. It's happening again now. I'd put him a little bit ahead of Con Knipple, who's basically having a 50-40-90 season as a rookie, and then VJ Edgecombe, well behind those two in third place. Most improved player, Denny Avdia, 25-7-7, number one for the Blazers. And I'd put Colin Gillespie and Ryan Rollins in that second and third spot at the moment. Gillespie's a starter for a really good Suns team, a playoff team right now. He's important for them on both ends of the floor. He's went from out of nowhere to in a rotation. Same thing for Ryan Rollins. So I think with those two guys, Jalen Johnson, obviously there's a real argument for him. His statistical improvement offensively is undeniable, but I've got a hard time rewarding far worse defense. Sixth man in the year, Isaiah Stewart, I'd have him number one. 10 points per game, 5 boards. The numbers aren't super impressive on paper, but elite, elite, elite defense for the Pistons. If he played more minutes, he'd be in that defensive player of the year, top five, at least all defensive team conversation. Keldon Johnson, number two with the Spurs, best season of his career, 38% from three, elite downhill attacker, elite at-rim finisher, 14-6 with good defense for San Antonio. And A.J. Mitchell, we'll see how many games he ends up playing. He's out right now, but I put him third on my ballot, 14-4 off the bench, crucial creator for the OKC Thunder. And statistically, an elite defender. If you look at guys that have defended 80 pick and rolls, A.J. Mitchell is number one in the... If you look at the guys who have defended 80 isolations, A.J. Mitchell is number one in the NBA at points allowed in those isolations. And with Isaiah Stewart suspended right now after the brawl between the Pistons and the Hornets, what surprised me about this, when I posted this on social media, the video of this, the amount of people replying saying, the NBA's back. We need more of this. I'm a Beef Stew fan now. I'm an Isaiah Stewart fan. We need this energy. There should be a fight every week. That kind of shocked me. If you're watching live on YouTube or listening to the podcast on Spotify, I'd be curious, leave a comment. Do you agree with that? Because I was kind of shocked by the amount of positive response there was to this fight. It seems to me that a lot of people think this is good for the NBA. Personally, I think rivalries are what spark from stuff like this. If you saw the Hornets get the 8 seed and they end up moving into the playoffs and face the Pistons in round one, this is the type of energy you want. You want Detroit and Charlotte fans and players to dislike each other. So I'm personally cool with it. I get why players get suspended as a result of it. You can't encourage this behavior if you're the NBA, but ultimately I think it's overall a good thing for the NBA. Coach of the year, Joe Mazzulla, number one. Talked about him on the podcast earlier this week with Drew Carter. JB Bickerstaff, two. Jordan Ott with the Suns, three. I think that's pretty clear so far in my eyes. I know there's other guys you can put in that conversation. I wouldn't rule out Kenny Atkinson moving on up with Cleveland right now. They seem very, very for real. And the Cavs are winning games with different guys in and out of the lineup as well. So that's been very, very, very impressive with what Cleveland's done as of late as we enter the All-Star break. Tanking. We got to talk about tanking. So tanking's been the big topic in the NBA this week. Jaren Jackson Jr. debuted with Utah. He had 22 points through three quarters last weekend, and then he sat, and so did Lauri Markkanen, and so did Yusuf Nurkic. And on that Saturday, Utah watched a 15-point lead disappear, and they lost. And that was the point. They're trying to lose. They've won the two games they did. They did that same thing since then. And so they're 2-1 when they set their starters. But with Jaren Jackson Jr., we just learned literally minutes prior to this podcast recording that he's likely done for the season because he's having surgery to remove a non-cancerous growth that was discovered in his left knee. And the MRI that he had to receive when he was traded from the Memphis Grizzlies to the Utah Jazz, that's what discovered it. And so I'm told, according to sources, that this is an abnormal tissue growing in his knee. It's not cancerous, but it's something that they want to get rid of early because over time it can erode cartilage, it can cause swelling, it can cause stiffness. And so they don't want other issues to occur as a result of this tissue growing. And so I know, like, it's fun to make jokes about how this is them just tanking again, making up injuries and all that. But my understanding is that Jackson wanted to play with his teammates for at least a few games before getting the surgery. And he talked with doctors and they put him on a minutes limit. And that's why he sat. No explanation for why Yusuf Nurkic sat or why Lauri Markkanen sat. But the Jazz are 2-1 in the games. They've sat their starters for the fourth quarter. Oops. Like accidental winning in those games. I thought the Bam Adebayo quote after Miami lost to Utah earlier this week was funny. He's like, we can't let ourselves lose to teams that are trying to lose. And the fact is that players know what's happening. Coaches know what's happening. Everybody knows what's happening with tanking right now. There are 9 teams actively tanking before the All-Star break. 9 teams. Utah, the Grizzlies traded Jaren Jackson. They're not rushing Zach Edey back. They don't care if Ja Morant's playing many games. The Pacers rested 6 of their veterans in a loss to Utah last week. Rick Carlisle, all year long, has been playing lineups without a source of offense, without a source of creation out there. They've been tanking all year long, just very subtly. Carlisle's quite good at it. The Bucks are keeping Giannis out as long as possible. Trae Young and Anthony Davis haven't played yet for the Wizards. The Bulls traded half of their roster, and now they have this nonsensical group with 8 guards. They're starting Gershon Yabusele at center. The Nets and Kings aren't trying to win. The Mavericks aren't trying to win. So even the team that hit jackpot a year ago and got Cooper Flagg, they're back in the tank. They're trying to lose. And the league is in a position right now with the 2019 lottery reform that has failed. They flattened the odds where the top 3 teams get 14% chances at the number 1 pick rather than the first team getting 25%. So we're not seeing process level tanking with the early 2010 Sixers, these teams that are just terrible, like truly horrible, low teens in the wins. But we're seeing more teams tanking to the middle of the lottery, because your odds are better now. The Mavericks, they moved up from the 11th best odds to number 1 to get Cooper Flagg. And since 2019, when the odds were flattened, 11 of the 28 top 4 picks went to teams with 7th or worse odds. And that's matched decades, 29 years, for 11 teams to move into the top 3 as it was previously. So we've matched decades of lottery chaos in just 7 years with the amount of teams that have moved up with 7th or worst odds. And this is happening early this year into great extremes because of this draft class that we've talked so much about this year on the podcast with draft class. Darren Peterson at Kansas, AJ DiBonta at BYU, Cam Boozer at Duke, and a bunch of other guys after that, that really round out the top 7, top 8, possibly even the whole top 10. And I talked to a bunch of executives, a bunch of people around the league over this past week or so, really the whole year. This has been a topic. I think a lot of executives have been waiting for this to bubble up and be a media discussion, which it is this week. And one of the GMs I talked to said to me, he's like, people are doing this because the draft is so loaded, but that doesn't make it okay. And this GM thinks the league office needs to do something about it, suspend or strip draft odds or fine teams. But like, everybody's talking about Utah right now. The issue with that is that it's not just Utah, it's 9 teams. Is it worse if a team is sitting their players in the fourth quarter, or is it worse if they're resting them the whole game? Is it worse if a coach is putting out stupid lineups, or is it worse if a team is just playing a lineup that makes no sense with no center like the Chicago Bulls, and they're not playing stars in the fourth quarter? What's worse? It lives in a gray area. And so the Jazz get fined $100,000 a year ago for violating the player participation policy with Lauri Markkanen. 3 years ago now, the Dallas Mavericks were fined $750,000 because they tanked out of the play-in to get into the lottery. That's the year they drafted Derek Lively. Teams view these fines as a tax for doing what's best for your franchise. And as long as you have a system that rewards losing, playing, you know, fining teams and all this, it's just whack-a-mole. Teams are always going to find ways to game the system. And so these half measures, flattened odds, or people have talked about wins-based odds or multi-year formulas or lottery team tournaments, these can all be gamed. As long as it's tied to record, a draft, as long as draft position is tied to record. It can be gamed. And so that's why I've always wondered, how can you sever the link between losing and draft position? And that's where we get to the solutions here. And Mike Zarin, executive for the Celtics, over a decade ago, he came up with what I think is a brilliant idea with the wheel, where teams rotate through groups of picks. And the way it would work is that you get a pick within each group every X amount of years. So the way that most people talk about the wheel is that there would be six pick groups every 5 years. So every 5 years, you would go through a group where you have a chance at the first to sixth pick in the draft at random, or one of the last six picks in the first round at random. There'd be these, or you could do three pick groups every 10 years. So there's different ways to approach it, as he talked about a decade ago, with these randomized picks within each group. And I've long supported this concept. I think it's the best. I think it's what the NBA should do. But at the time when Zarin was talking about this in 2013, 2014, 2015, there was a lot of pushback from owners. Teams were worried, like, how are bad teams supposed to get out? There's no way out. And so over the years, my take on that, the lottery wheel, or revised version of Zarin's, is that there'd be six pick groups every 5 years, but rather than the picks being randomized within each group, the groups would have odds. So all 30 teams would have a chance at the number one pick. All 30 teams could have a slice of the pie. That's the way I've thought about it over the years, as a revised version. So you could, for example, instead of right now, they have 1,000 pick combinations in the NBA. If you did 600, for example, tier one could get 40 combinations. That gives you roughly a 6.7% chance at the number one pick, roughly a 37.5% chance at a top six pick. Tier one, the lowest they could end up if other teams move up and they don't end up in the top six, could be 7-12. And then you would move down from there with tier two getting the remaining picks, tier three after that, tier four. But tier five, tier four, tier three, all these different groups could still have a chance to move up to number one. Teams could trade those draft odds, those combinations, to other teams. If a tier three team, which has 18 combinations and a 3% chance at moving up to number one, they could trade 9 of those combinations to another team, or 15 of those combinations, and hang on to 3 of them. This concept I like. That's why I came up with it, and why I think it's a good alternative to the Zarin approach. It still receives the same type of pushback. Like, anybody is going to say the same thing. An owner is going to say, why would I vote for a system that stops rewarding me being terrible? It's the same issues that people have with Zarin's original version, which I think is the cleanest version and easiest to figure out, and my more extreme version, still the same issues, right? So here's the thing. No team should be incentivized to lose. That's the whole issue right now. If you remove that incentive, playoff teams like the Bucks and the Bulls and the Grizzlies and the Mavericks, those teams are still competing for the playoffs. If their odds weren't tied to the lottery, they're still trying to win games. And you wouldn't see teams putting out idiotic lineups or bad game plans. You wouldn't see the Pacers throwing their season away. You'd see them doing what the Celtics have tried to do, and that's try to compete without their best player. And so, I mean, ultimately, I have always been somebody who's been in support of teams doing what's best. And that's oftentimes been blowing it up, tanking. That's the rules. Like, that's the way it is. It often is the best approach. But ultimately, I think for the league and the place that it is now, where a third of the teams aren't trying to win games, that's why it's a bigger issue than it's ever been. And I think if you have a wheel concept, it's not, I mean, look, player petition policy is still going to exist. You know, stars are going to still have to play marquee games. And the league in this situation would no longer have to guess whether a team is resting just to rest or tanking. That suspicion would be gone. And I think that's critical for integrity, because the NBA has obviously fully embraced sports betting at this point, and they profit off of fans engaging and betting. They can't partner with sports books while also allowing teams to deliberately lose games. And that's one of the issues here. And so it's important for the league's integrity. It's important for a competition standpoint. It's important from a fan engagement and entertainment standpoint. And I know no system's perfect. There's edge cases with the wheel. There's implementation questions. This isn't a matter of if a new system is flawless. It's about whether it's better than what we have. And tanking, ultimately, despite the fact that it's good for front offices, tanking's bad for the players. It's bad for their development. It's bad for coaches, for morale, for their development, for trying to develop themselves and move up and win games. It's bad for fans. You can't buy a ticket to an NBA game until the day of. Sometimes even then it's a risk. It's bad for fan interest. It's bad for the quality of the game. If it's bad for the quality, that means it's bad for the bottom line with the amount of money that can be coming in. It's bad for kids. Like, you're teaching kids that sometimes it's good to lose. Sometimes it's good to try to lose. So, I mean, tanking is really only good as a strategic mechanism under the current rules, under the current system. And that's why a decade ago, I strongly supported the Mike Zarin wheel idea. It's why I still do today, and why I push my take on it with my version of the lottery wheel, taking it to an even greater extreme. And I think, like, the main rebuttal that a lot of people have around the league is that they say bad teams need a safety net. If you're bad, you need to feel like you have a way out. But by flattening the odds, the NBA has already effectively removed that safety net. We've seen only one sub-20 win team move up to number one. And that's since 2019, when the odds were flattened, when Minnesota did it in 2020. And the most common outcome for those teams with the 14% odds, 21 teams, is the fifth pick. 7 times out of 21 of those teams have we seen that team move down to the fifth pick. And so the NBA has already effectively removed that safety net. With a wheel, bad teams don't have to stay bad to improve their positioning. You can acquire better odds through trades, or you can get lucky any year. I know there's a sense of randomness, and you might push back against that, and that's fair. You might say a contender could win the first pick, and that's true. Like, that could happen, but it's already possible. OKC holds the rights to the Clippers pick. The Celtics got number one in 2017 after they made an East Finals through the Nets pick they had. That's the year they traded down from 1 to 3 and got Jason Tatum. To me, the better question is, should randomness exist in a system that rewards winning or one that rewards losing? And that's what we're facing right now. With the current system, there's a lot of randomness, with Dallas moving from 11 to 1. And there's still a lot of tanking despite that randomness. There's still a lot of intentional losing despite that randomness. Is it better to move to a more random system in which teams are rewarded for winning and not rewarded for losing? I say that's a clear yes. And even in this world, it's not a perfect world, obviously. Some teams are still going to stink. Teams are still going to trade away good players. They're still going to do load management and have minutes limits. And they're going to focus on development in the long term over the short term wins. They're gonna duck the tax. That's all still going to happen. But draft-driven tanking is gone. And no other solution does that besides the wheel. And what I've learned over the last day since I published the story, but also in recent weeks having conversations with people, is that the tanking is so bad right now around the NBA that there's an increased sense that the wheel concept has more interest than it did a decade ago because the tanking is so bad. I still don't think that actually happens. I still think it's too extreme. I wish Adam Silver would stomp his foot down and do something like that, but it seems like there's more support for rules that make subtle changes. For example, I've heard about, from multiple sources, setting a date in which losses stop mattering. So let's just say on February 1st, the lottery odds freeze, and everything that happens after that doesn't matter to the standings for the lottery. And this is a concept that people have talked about in public for years as a potential solution, and it seems like this has a lot of support as well. But I've heard one of the things that was mentioned to me by someone is that this date could be different every year, and that the NBA wouldn't reveal that date until after the season. I'm not a big fan personally. I think it's just going to incentivize teams to tank early and in the middle of the season instead of the middle of the season and late. I don't know. Maybe you take a section of the season at random. I'm not sure exactly what they're going to do about that, but I am not in favor of it. I think it's very confusing compared to the basics and the simplicity of the wheel. There's also talk about changing protections, which I'm actually pretty intrigued by, regardless of what the concept looks like, where you would remove the ability to protect picks outside of the top four. So that would mean, so like this year, Utah and Washington have top eight protected picks. So you would limit the chances of a team like that trying to tank to keep that top eight protection, or tank out of the playoffs into the lottery with a top 14 protected pick. And I still don't think this changes a lot. Like if picks can only be protected 1-4, there's still incentive to lose to increase your odds to move into the top four. I think it's a half measure. And, you know, Adam Silver loves collaboration. It's one of his strengths, but I think in this case, it's one of his weaknesses. Adam has a situation with the competition committee where he has wheel supporters, like the wheel supporters that want randomness because they're teams that never tank. He has GMs that are against protections because they use protections because it's advantageous to them. So the competition committee that discusses all these rule changes, they're competing against each other literally on the court. These teams are competing against each other with ideas, with philosophies. Adam can't rely on the competition committee of 30 teams to make a decision that affects all 30 of them. He needs to do what he thinks is best. He can't collaborate here. He needs to stomp his foot down and do what he thinks is right. And if that is an idea that nobody is a fan of, maybe that's the best idea. If it's an idea that only 5 of the 10 owners support, he needs to push for that instead of not even trying for that. And I think if he doesn't want to make any changes and he just wants to fine teams or dock the 9 teams that are tanking right now some percentage of their odds, then he's going to do that. Like, tap into your inner David Stern and do that. I don't think he's going to fine these teams. I think what the NBA is going to do is they're just going to come out this offseason and make some minor changes. They're going to change the way protections work or something else simple. And then next year in the 2027 draft, when the draft sucks in comparison to this potentially historic draft, they're going to say, well, it worked. Nobody's tanking as much this year. No, somebody's going to tank again. It's going to happen a lot. It's not going to stop. And ultimately, I think Adam's just going to stomp his foot down, install a rule that's a major change, and reimagine the draft. And if he can make this happen at the time expansion happens, when we expand to 32 teams at some point in the 2030s, overhauling the draft system, I think that's the best timing to do it. You can do your half measures now, but you have to have a plan for when expansion happens. And that's the opportunity to change the way the league operates. You can change the draft. You can change the standings. You can change conferences and divisions and everything else. That's your opportunity to truly reshuffle things and improve the quality of the game and improve the weaknesses. And that's on Adam Silver. And that's going to be his decision at the end of the day. And I don't think collaboration is necessarily, for the commissioner, the best option when it comes to the tanking issue, because every other team has their different philosophies. Appreciate you guys in the live chat on YouTube listening to me rant. I want to get to some of your questions. I know we got some great comments in here from Barlow. He said, I don't understand why you guys are so against load management. I follow English football and players miss games or are benched all the time and prep for big matches. Why is it an issue for the NBA? It's an issue because you're getting paid $75 million to play 82 games. And if you're playing 55 of them, it's really a slap in the face of the fans. It hurts the product. There's so many games. I understand the point, but like if you're missing games, it worsens the product. That's to me at the end of the day, the main issue there. I know others might feel differently, but I think it just hurts the product at the end of the day. regulator said, the NBA changes the lottery odds rules. Will they wait until after expansion team schedules for play is announced? Yeah, I think that's the best timing for it. I think that is 100% the best timing. You do it when expansion happens. That, I mean, personally, I think I've long thought, I've said this 100 times on my podcast over the years, I think one of the things the NBA needs to do when it comes to expansion, or just do it tomorrow, do it today. Let the top three seeds in each conference choose their first round opponent from the 5-8 group. That creates rivalries and animosity between players and teams and between fan bases. If the one seed chooses the 6th seed to face in the first round, because that's an advantageous matchup for them, it makes the regular season matter more as well, because then right now we have different incentives at different levels of the league. At the bottom of the league, you're incentivized to lose because you get higher draft lottery odds. In the middle of the league, at the play-in level, you're incentivized to lose if you don't want to make the playoffs. So you fall from the 10 seed to the 11, 12, 13, and you miss the playoffs. You're incentivized to win to get the 7 or 8 instead of the 9 or 10, because you have to win one game instead of two games to get into the playoffs. You're incentivized to get the 5 or 6 seed because you're guaranteed a spot in the playoffs rather than being in the play-in where you could get eliminated. You're incentivized to get a top 4 seed because you get home court advantage in the first round. The 1 seed gets home court, of course, throughout the entire playoffs. But how many times over the years have we seen teams lose a game purposely, losing again, incentivized to lose because they want to be the 2 seed instead of the 1 seed, or the 4 seed instead of the 3 seed? Again, I don't think losing should ever be an incentive at the bottom of the standings or at the top of the standings. And so I think when it comes time for expansion, the NBA needs to have a serious conversation also about the top of the standings and letting the first 3 seeds choose their first round opponent. That means the incentive would be for the first seed, you get home court the whole playoffs, and you get to choose your first round opponent first. Second, you get to get the second pick. Third, you get the third pick. And then fourth seed, you can't be chosen by any of the top 3 teams. You just get the leftover one, but you can't be chosen by the 1 seed, for example. So there's incentive from 1, 2, 3 to 4, and then 5 and 6 are guaranteed a playoff spot. 7 and 8 have to win one. 9 and 10 get into the play-in and have an opportunity. Again, like, incentives matter, and that's the position we're in right now in the NBA. And I hope the league thinks about that when it comes time for expansion. And I think All-Star Weekend is going to be a really interesting time. I mean, we're all going to be watching the games this whole weekend, right? We're going to be watching the Sunday with the revised teams, and the 2 American teams, the Stars and the Stripes versus the World Team. And hopefully it's awesome. I'm doubtful. I don't think it will be, but hopefully it is. We're going to be watching Saturday night. We're going to be watching whatever on Friday night. Hopefully it's fun. But what's happening behind the scenes is meetings between Adam Silver and executives, between owners and different people, minds that make up the decisions. And that's where we're going to, I think, from this weekend, you'll probably learn more about expansion. Adam Silver undoubtedly will be talking about the tanking going on and potential solutions. So this is a really pivotal weekend in the NBA that's going to dictate what the league is going to look like over the next decade. So that's just something to think about entering the weekend. It's really what I'm thinking about entering the weekend. To be totally honest, I'm flying out to LA for All-Star Weekend because I want to interview people. I can't wait to have some people on my podcast. I'm very excited about the people we're having on and holding out hope for a couple people I have some asks in for. But for the event itself, I'm just less interested in it. I think a lot of people feel that way with the way the game has degraded. But ultimately, this ties back to the talk about tanking. The NBA has shown such a willingness to experiment with different All-Star formats and different standings formats, the NBA Cup and the play-in tournament, because they're trying to make things matter more. They want All-Star Weekend to feel like it matters more. They want the full regular season to feel like it matters more. And so that's where this weekend is pretty exciting to me, because we're at a point in the NBA right now where all the talk is about tanking and how a third of the league is trying to lose games. And we'll see over time how that evolves, to see if we get some real solutions that blossom from this weekend. And we'll see about that. We'll see about that. JRH in the chat said the Hornets have a plus 16 game improvement from pre-All-Star game from last season. How much credit goes to Coach Charles Lee? I think a lot of it, Jay, a hell of a lot of it goes to Lee because of the system he's installed, the way he gets that offense moving, different guys controlling the ball, four guys and so many different lineups that can handle the ball, the defensive intensity that team plays with. Earlier this week, if you heard my podcast episode, I talked about Moussa Diabaty before he got suspended and how excellent he's been defensively for Charlotte as an enforcer inside and as a switchable guy. I just think Lee pushes the right buttons. He plays more versatile and flexible with Diabaty out there. He plays drop coverage with Kalkbrenner, a big beefy center. They shapeshift. And I always appreciate when a team can take on different styles. So that's what I'm very excited for with the Charlotte Hornets right now. I think they're for real, man. I do. I think they are for real. In the dunk contest, who do I have in the dunk contest? Ask Sword of the Evening. Thank you guys for participating in the live YouTube chat with some questions here at the end of our podcast before I head out to Los Angeles shortly. So we got Carter Bryant, Jackson Hayes, Keshad Johnson. I'm missing somebody. Who am I missing from Jace Richardson? Jace Richardson, that's right, the fourth one. We got a little guy in there. I'm going to say, I think it's going to be Carter Bryant. I'll say Carter Bryant wins it. But I wouldn't rule out Jace Richardson, one of the little guys, because little guy dunks always look more impressive. Jameer said, still bothers me. Dwight Howard missed top 75 as a Magic fan. He did more as a number one all-star than AD. I was literally, as I was reading your sentence, I was just thinking to myself, yeah, they should kick out AD and put in Dwight Howard. So I'm with you there on that. BX Rep said, another issue with expansion is that the overall player pool isn't as deep as people think it is. I don't agree. I get what you're saying, but there's a lot of good players internationally and in the NBA and in the G League that don't get minutes. There's a lot of good players worldwide and in the current league that aren't getting minutes. So would the league be more diluted? Yeah. But I think the league is really deep with good quality talent that isn't in rotations. So that's the way I feel about that. Who's your favorite mid-round draft pick? Asked Zakarian Jones. It was Keaton Wagler from Illinois. But he's moved into kind of that top five, top six conversation. So I don't think I can actually say Keaton Wagler anymore out of Illinois. He just keeps having big games. So I wouldn't say Keaton Wagler applies anymore. Braden Burries from Arizona, he'd be one I'd say as well. I really like Cameron Carr from Baylor. That's another one that comes to mind. Adai Mata at Michigan, big center, 7'2", 7'3". I think like he's not quite as big as Zach Edey, but there's a need for big, beefy bigs in the NBA where you can play with two bigs. And plus, Mata has shown some shooting upside as well. So I'm very intrigued by him as a mid first round draft pick. So those are some names that would come to mind now. We got to wrap up here, guys. A little bit of a shorter show today because I'm traveling today for All-Star Weekend. We're going to have a lot planned. I got some great interviews planned with media people and non-media people out in Los Angeles this weekend at All-Star Weekend. You'll be able to hear some of those podcasts on my feed, The Kevin O'Connor Show, on Spotify and Apple, and then, of course, here on Yahoo NBA on YouTube. If you're watching us live, please be sure to give us a like and subscribe to Yahoo NBA if you have not done so already. We'll be back again with a show on Monday. We're going to recap All-Star Weekend, and I'm going to have a guest looking ahead to the second half of the season as well with our Monday show, and we're probably going to have multiple shows next week, probably more than just two, depending on how many interviews I knock out this weekend. So thank you again for tuning in. Hope you enjoy your weekend, everybody. Enjoy the final night of the first half of the season. Actually, we still have games on Thursday night. So enjoy that, everybody. Enjoy your weekend. Enjoy the All-Star Weekend events. and have a good one.